You're listening to the Crypto Report exclusively on the Daily Stormer.
Experts claim to be a Bigfoot scream. It is regarded as the highest quality audio of the creature ever captured.
Here's the thing.
Fine.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Crypto Report.
Oh, yeah. What an intro. We've got the full Wrecking Crew here today for this 80th episode. We got the Hate Farmer.
Welcome, all you filthy goyim.
Yeah, filthy. Filthy. What were you saying?
It's the Diamonds and Pearl episode.
Or the Diamond and Silk.
Either way, it sounds like a law firm.
Yeah, yeah.
Diamonds and pearl clutching.
That's right. Well, we've got the Hate Farmer, who I doubt is clutching his pearls at this moment.
Clutching my balls.
I mean, the White Tuber. We got the White Tuber.
I'm just clutching my heart from that intro, sir.
That was so a great intro.
Powerful.
And powerful. Yes. It was a very special intro for a very special episode. This is, as we said, it's the 80th episode. The title of which is Born to Raise Hell. We'll see. Maybe we'll raise a little, but one thing's for sure. On the 80th episode of the Crypto Report, we're going to let our nuts swing.
Down low.
They're going to swing low. They're going to swing hard. They're going to swing heavy like a hammer.
Yeah, sitting on the edge of my chair.
I was in a chat the other day, and some guys were talking about going to the gym and all, and this one guy says there's some dyke at the gym that doesn't like bitches and raises hell when people use chalk. You know, they chalk up their hands and stuff so they can get hold of the bar real good and maybe lift more weight or whatever. And I told him, I said, well, what you need to do is chalk up your balls and sit on all the benches and seats that she's going to use, and make sure you leave a lot of chalk ball prints surrounded by sweat, and she'll love that.
The residue.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, how you like me now, Gertrude? We got a lot of good stuff to talk about tonight. The first thing I want to talk about is we've nearly hit the 200 mark for the DLive, which means that just a few more subs or follows or whatever they're going to, I believe they call them follows. Like, you know, the people who subscribe to your DLive channel are followers, not subscribers. But
that means that you're the leader.
I'm the leader for life. In just a few more, then, you know, unless they throw some more crap out there that I have to do, we'll be affiliates and we'll be able to do the full standard live show that, like we've been doing on the TKR Live White Wednesday and Friday night special shows, which is good. You know, if we don't have that 200 and we're not affiliates, the only thing we can do is like, I can stream by myself, and that's no good. So
that's lame.
Yeah.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought you had to have 200 to have a show.
Well, no. You can go on there with zero and like stream by yourself. Which,
yeah,
I mean,
play Fortnite.
Which, I mean, great, whatever. But I want, you know, what I'm looking for is a seamless transition to the, you know, just to move the show from one platform to another to the other, and hopefully this will actually improve the streams. I think we've got some solutions on there where we can improve the audio, and I don't think their terms of service are quite so stringent as over on YouTube. So, you know.
They also don't have the algorithms and the fucking shadow banning and all that stuff.
Well, not that we know of, no. I mean, we may keep saying N-word just because that's become a meme. You know, it's like on the YouTube live streams. Instead of saying the N-word, I say N-word. And
so that way nobody's offended.
Well, whether they're offended or not, I haven't broken TOS.
Right. So they can't be offended.
Right. But we'll continue. You know, they're ending Hangouts, which Hangouts, for people who don't understand, they're called Hangouts on Air. And they started off as a Google Plus feature. But a couple of years back, they integrated them into YouTube and made Hangouts a YouTube feature. And Hangouts is the app, the platform, where when you watch a YouTube live stream and there's several people on it, they've used Hangouts. And it was great. It was one of the best design things that Google ever did. You know, you've got this little interface, and you invite people into it. And all they got to do is sign in with their Google account and click on the link that you send them, and they come into the Hangout. And, you know, if everybody's in there isn't worried about being doxxed, you know, they can all face fag and everything. But if not, it'll show their avatar. And it even was set up to where it would show your face or your avatar or whatever when you're the one speaking. So people who are watching the show who don't necessarily know the voices or the faces of everybody, when a particular person speaks, they know who's speaking. And it had the awesome little chat to the side that was set up so well, you know, and had it to where when they put in the username of somebody who is in the live stream, it would highlight it in orange to where, like, you know, if they put Asdor in there, I'd look and I'd be like, oh, there's something they want me to address. Oh, well, that sucks. I'm going to ignore it, you know, or whatever. And so they're ending it. They're just ending it on August 1st. And I've done a lot of research on this. They are not replacing it with anything. And nobody can figure, you know, people in the, you know, on the webzines and stuff that write about this sort of thing, they can't figure why they would end this one because it's so popular. You know, these live streams are big. Well, I know why. And I heard somebody saying that JF Garipi was saying the same thing. But whether that's the case or not, it's still correct. Is that they are stopping these live streams because there's too much goyim knowing going on in them. And it's harder for them to regulate the live streams because, you know, like you put a video up and, you know, over a certain amount of time, people come along and start watching it and this and that. But like, you know, the way that we run the live streams, we have a regular schedule and everybody knows when they're going to happen, but we take to several platforms to make sure everybody knows that they're coming. Like I'll start the countdown on the thing at the latest early in the day of the night we're going to have the live stream, usually the day before. And that sends them, if they've clicked the bell, that sends them a notification.
Well, it's supposed to, at least.
Yeah, it's supposed to. And I would have somebody go and post it on the Daily Stormer BBS for me to make an announcement. And it was also being posted on the front page over at infostormer.com to let everybody know, come check it out. And so, you know, people come and just all of a sudden this thing starts. And, you know, YouTube doesn't know what's going to be said or anything. And you've got all these people listening and all, and you know, my goodness, they could say things that the goyim aren't supposed to know about on there before a trusted flagger can even shut it down. And so, you know, they're stopping it. You know, it's a great platform to where people could, it was a real equalizer, you know, like so many things on the internet have been. It was an equalizer between your citizen journalist or, you know, your guy who wants to be a radio guy or your guy who wants to be a TV guy or whatever. It was a great equalizer between them and the gatekeepers at the mainstream media because, you know, all you got to have is a decent internet connection and a computer and a microphone, basically, and you could get on there and do your thing. And people loved it. There were lots of live streams that get tons more views, listens, whatever you want to call it, than talk radio shows and things like that. And you even have, like, you know, you got people like Vince of the Red Elephants who, and Mark Dice is another one, who will get more views than shows on, like, primetime shows on MSNBC and shit, you know? So they're shutting it down. And they're not replacing it. They're like, if you want to keep doing this, just go to Stream Now. And Stream Now doesn't let you do anything but just stream one person. So it's not going to be a viable thing.
No, it was a legit marketplace of ideas, which is why they had to shut it down.
Yeah, yeah.
They couldn't moderate it and control it enough. And a lot of people were doing sneaky things, like they'd have a real transgressive show, something that violates the TOS, and then they just delete it.
Yeah, some people were even so sneaky that they would do a real transgressive show, and then as soon as the live stream was over, they'd take it down and they'd post it on another channel. I don't know who was doing that, but we were doing that. But, you know, it affects people finding your stuff, and so when the channels that we had before were no longer a viable option a few weeks ago, I said, okay, well, we'll just start doing it on this little channel that I had. It was a channel that, you know, it had no subs or anything. I didn't use it for anything but to go on the live streams on another channel that we were doing it on the TKR live stream channel. And I said, well, we'll do it on this one. And I said, I'm just going to leave them up. And, I'm going to make sure and download them when the show's over, but if they take them down, they take them down. But I'm going to leave them up so that, you know, people miss the show, they can find it right there. They don't have to do all this big skip, hop, and jump and go find the other thing. And it's worked out pretty well, you know, saying N-word instead of the N-word. It seems to have kept us on there. But they, man, do they mess with our views and our subs.
We've had several people say that they can see in real time the subscriptions going down.
Yeah, and well, not just the subscriptions, the views. You know, but yeah, like all at once, we lost 30 something subs last time. There's a guy watching, and he's like, at the end of the show, you had 937 subs, and the show ended, and so the page, you know, had to refresh the page to play the video. And when the page refreshed, we had 901 subs. But like on that same show, I'd left the computer on and went to bed. And probably, I mean, I didn't sleep 11 hours, but it's probably 11 hours before I got back to the computer and went over to that page and everything. And it says on there 874 views. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's what it was at last night when I went to bed. This was right after we ended the stream, so I'm going to refresh the page and see how many it went up. I refreshed the page and it 831 views. Lost 43 views.
Weird.
Yeah, it's impossible to lose.
Oh, you know what? I'm looking at the views right now for the last live stream.
Oh, they're low, man.
1500. Yeah, it was 1500 yesterday or last night, and now it's 1297.
Yeah, isn't that something? Isn't that something?
Yeah. Very interesting. It'd be a shame if something happened to your stream.
Well, and without a time machine, there's no way to unwatch a video.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people have asked questions about this, like, well, could it be that it's because people are getting their accounts deleted? And the answer to that is no. Because now that could be possibly a reason why you lose subs. But you're not going to lose 30-something subs in 1 second that way, you know. But the thing is, it doesn't matter whether you're subscribed or not, or even if you're logged in or not. If you watch the video, we get a view because it goes by IP address. It's a hit. It's like a hit on a website. You know, they come to that page, and that's counted as a view. And they log the IP address so that, you know, if you navigate to another page and you're like, hey, I think I'm going to go back and watch that again, it won't count as two views because it's, you know, you're one person with one IP address. And so it's obviously absolute chicanery. And I believe they call this isolating the content. Is that's the term for it, isolating the content. Because when James O'Keefe, the Project Veritas guy, you know, he's been exposing Google pretty good here lately. And Ted Cruz was grilling that weird dothead, I guess he was, Google guy. I guess he was a lawyer or something that they had up there when they were having the hearings over whether there was bias in how they were doing things. And he said, okay, well, what about this email that was signed by like 1,800 Google management employees that says that this James O'Keefe and this Ben Shapiro and this PragerU and this, Jordan Peterson, that they're all a bunch of Nazis and O'Keefe is exposing everything. So we have to isolate the content. It's time to isolate the content. Well, isolate the content means they throw this freaking algorithm on it and it does these things. And who knows? You know, they're screwing with Mark Dice right now where they go and, like, you know, he makes tons of money. He's got, I think he's well up into the six figures on his subs. And so he makes a lot of money on monetization of his videos, or used to. And, like, they go and demonetize his videos for no good reason. And he shows it from the back end of his YouTube account where it's like somebody came and did a manual review and demonetized it. Like, the algorithm didn't. And like, it just makes me wonder, is there somebody, some dothead that the trusted flaggers, the ADL, have assigned to us? And he's like, oh, no. They should not be getting 900 views in under 15 minutes. Let's remove 150 of them while no one's looking, you know?
All right.
But, I mean, you know, I'm not so egotistical that that's the first thing that comes to mind. I figure it's an algorithm, and it's based on the type of content we produce and, you know, the history that I have with YouTube, because I have a history of this stuff. When I went and did the thing in Houston, the Sam Houston statue thing, where I BTFO'd the Oath Keepers and gave the historic speech in front of the Sam Houston statue to the local media. The one where I said, where I started the Gas Kushner meme and said that Milo was a pedophilic faggot and all that. Those two videos hit my YouTube channel that night, and they started going viral, both of them. It was obvious they were going to go viral. By the way, you know, just every hour that passed, the amount of views was going up and up and up. The rate that they were coming in was going up and up and up, and they were getting up around like 30-something thousand views a piece, and all of a sudden the channel got deleted, like banned, boom. And I was like, how can you ban the channel? And they were like, this stuff's hate speech or whatever. And I'm like, dude, this is news. This is live streams of an actual political protest that was going on at a political event. And the news, and one of them is a guy, me, giving a press conference to the local media. And you're telling me you're going to delete that for hate speech? If somebody else put that up and said, look at this hateful fucker, you're not going to delete that. And they acknowledged that tacitly by the fact that another guy did put it up and it's still there. And that was his whole thing, is look at this hateful fucker. You know, but I can't put the exact same video on my channel. But as it turns out, it doesn't work for him. He went and disabled all the comments, because the comments just started flooding in by the thousands. And they weren't the ones he was expecting. They were all in support of what I was doing up there. But I went and checked the thing recently. It's in limited state now. Anybody that doesn't know what limited state is, that's when you'll go to a video and you get a black screen that says, while this video doesn't violate terms of service, it's been flagged by enough of our members as offensive that it may offend everybody, so we have removed all of its features. In other words, they removed the view count, they removed the likes and dislikes, and they removed the comments. So there's nothing there but just the video to watch, and you have to click a button affirmatively stating you understand and wish to proceed. So, I mean, we're way deep in George Orwell territory with this whole YouTube thing, and have been for a long time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, they want to put us in room 101.
Yeah. Want to put us in.
Hey, I got breaking news here.
Oh, yeah, what you got?
We just rolled over 200 subscribers, or you did, on DLive.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. It must be all these people listening live.
Yeah.
While we're recording. We are kind of doing the show more live. I hope the sound comes out well, because if it does, we're going to do it this way more often. Instead of, doing like a canned thing where we record the first half and then we stop, and then we record the second half and then we stop, and then I go back later and I add the intro and I add the break and I add the end music and all that, I figured it would change the energy a whole lot. So I made the intro and the break stuff and all ahead of time, and we're just rolling like a live show. So hopefully that makes for good energy. Because if it does and it sounds fine, then I think it's certainly a better way to do it. And that's just one step away from us figuring out some way to where we could broadcast live and take your phone calls and stuff. And wouldn't that be awesome?
We probably got to use OBS somehow. I've been looking it up lately.
That's your answer to everything, is OBS.
I see these people.
Everyone else doesn't.
Yeah, they stopped using Hangouts and they started using OBS instead.
No, I already looked into that. And if you're talking about doing YouTube, there's some way that you can use OBS, and you can bring. But the thing is, it doesn't make it work on YouTube. You have to gather everybody up on Skype.
Right.
And then you're running one feed through there that's got them all on Skype. And that's, I am not doing all that shit.
Skype is garbage, too.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. It used to pause the fuck out of me how many people still use Skype to record their podcast. I'm like, oh, no wonder that, I'd go on to somebody's show as a guest and they bring me on Skype. And oh, no wonder the sound quality is subpar.
Maybe like TeamSpeak or something. I don't know.
TeamSpeak. Yeah, if you want to sound like you're on walkie-talkies. But no, we're going to DLive. Period. That's where everybody's going. PewDiePie's over there now.
It's the future.
Yeah.
E-gaming thoughts are.
You want to learn some. So that's some obviously the place to be.
Yeah.
But seriously, this is the best thing that could have happened to us as far as live streaming goes, because, it wasn't a level playing field over there. They're purposely suppressing the thing, so that as few people as possible can hear it, but B, to create the false image that this content is not popular, that nobody wants to hear it. And that's just bullshit. And like I said, just the confluence of events and the way things happened, it was the worst possible time ever to start trying to build an audience on a new channel. Hell, if we'd have done this a year ago, we'd have been well up into the five figures, because they weren't doing this shit. They were waiting until somebody flagged your content to go review it and see if, did it violate something. And, now they're just preemptively doing this with algorithms.
Yeah, I don't think DLive is going to do this, because it's not as large a company. And you need a pretty sophisticated, IT team to be able to come up with an algorithm that can,
Well, but that's part of DLive's thing, is that they're not going to do this.
They're going to get a lot bigger since, in 10 days. Isn't that right? The end of the month is when Hangout stops?
The first.
Yeah. See, I use Hangout for other things, too, communicating with some other people, so that's going to suck.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be better off now that you can't do that, because it was a very insecure platform. It's like Skype, man. Like Skype, I've read these stories before about how, they've got software that's kind of peeping in on the conversations, listening for keywords and stuff like that, and people would get their Skype accounts banned, and they'd be like, why? What did I do? And, you were probably talking about naughty hate things on the internet on Skype, and they didn't like it, so they they deactivated your Skype account.
When I first jumped on the show, I had to after every episode, without fail, my Skype account would be terminated. It said suspicious activity or something like
that. Suspicious activity.
Yeah. So I had to come up with a new account every single fucking show.
Yeah. And it's not like you were naming them all the same thing or whatever.
Nope.
Yeah. I got done with Skype completely months ago. You know, if somebody were to invite, and I don't go on other people's shows much anymore because, you know, there's all this stuff going on. And so I'm safest just to do my own show. I like doing my own show anyway. But if somebody invited me onto their show and I even wanted to go on it, and you're like, okay, but you got to do this Skype, I'd be like, okay, man, no thanks. I mean, you know, I've basically got the same attitude towards Skype, if not worse, than I have towards Discord. It's like, no, it's Zog. You know? So, yeah. Well, let's see if we got some stories here to talk about to these Goyim. I have one pulled up here. This is by Fry on Daily Stormer. It's a story that's up today called Mad Jew Bitch. Marianne Williamson leads fellow whites in a prayer of apology to blacks. And let me read a paragraph or two before we play the audio here. I guess I better move over to this other one if I'm going to play the audio. I keep forgetting that. My stuff's all backwards. Let me pull this up. Okay. Mad Jew Bitch Marianne Williamson. Marianne Williamson is a mad Jew bitch who markets herself. Now, in case anybody's wondering, she's the one who's on stage all the time talking about she's like on the battlefield of love or some crap like that at the debates. She's a Democrat candidate for president. But anyway, Marianne Williamson is a mad Jew bitch who markets herself as some kind of New Age guru. She's involved in just about everything you would expect a mad Jew bitch to be involved in, including pushing LGBT, stoking white guilt, and handing over more money and power to those who are swart of skin. According to Wikipedia, her daddy was an immigration lawyer, and she was raised within the tradition of conservative Judaism. Despite this, she seems to like mimicking Christian styling, the better to fool whites into accepting her insane agenda. As a Democratic presidential candidate, her signature policy is that whites should hand over somewhere between $100 billion and $200 to $500 billion to sub-Saharan Americans to atone for slavery, even though the practical result of that slavery is that those Afroids now enjoy a higher standard of living in America than they could possibly ever hope to have done had their genes remained in Africa where they belonged. The above video shows Marianne leading whites in a prayer of apology to blacks. The prayer starts, well, I'm going to play it so it doesn't matter where it starts. It says, someone begins screeching crazily. And this is why we're going to play as much of it as we're going to play, so you can hear the crazed screeching, and we'll discuss it. But listen to this crap, man. You guys ready?
Oh, God. I wish you played it for me before. It's bad.
Yeah.
Prepare yourself, Goyim.
Okay, here we go. Yikes. They're at some church. And just to set the scene for people who haven't seen the video, she gets all these swipple white people to stand up. And they all, if they have one of the few token blacks in the room near them, they all huddle up around the black and put their hands on them. And they bow their heads and close their eyes and pray to the Lord.
And now as I speak, I'm going to ask the white Americans in the room to please repeat after me.
Don't do it.
What is white?
On behalf of myself and on behalf of my country.
I didn't ask him to speak for me.
To you and all African Americans.
Go back to Africa.
Go back to Africa.
In honor of your ancestors and on behalf of your children. Please hear this from my heart. I apologize. Please forgive us.
For not sending you back.
With this prayer, I acknowledge the depth of the evils that have been perpetrated against black people in America.
Hey, you EBT card be late, motherfucker. I'm sorry.
From slavery to lynchings to white supremacist laws.
That elected a black voting rights, president. Fuck you.
To all the ways, both large and small, all of them evil, all of them wrong.
Wow.
All the oppression.
White people sound evil.
And all of the injustices.
Like Darth Vader and shit.
Please forgive us.
This is some kind of anti-white voodoo going on up under here.
For the denial of any civil rights.
Yeah, no civil rights. None.
For inequalities in criminal justice.
And IQ.
To any instances and of police
ability
brutality.
To swim.
To the denial
legitimate
of opportunity.
Parent.
Oh, they got that police brutality
in
there.
For economic injustice. For any ways that a racial element has played into the perpetration of injustice.
Such as this disparity of white basketball players.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Please forgive us. With this prayer, I acknowledge the beauty and the genius of your culture.
Y'all be stank-ass niggas.
The beauty and the genius of their culture.
The power and the genius of those
this
who came
before
you.
This is nose rubbing
you.
And shit.
The power
yeah, she's
and the
polishing
genius
up that
of
hook.
Your children and your descendants. And with this prayer, we pray.
Bend over
may
and
your
kiss
children,
some nigger ass.
Wow.
With this
holy
prayer,
holy
we
may
pray.
Your men be blessed and protected. May your men be blessed and protected.
May your men
HIV
your work men and raise their childrens.
Be blessed and protected. May all your men and all your women and all your children.
This bitch is still going.
May your hoes never be infested with
be
crabs and
by
STDs.
At this time.
May all the bullets shot at you be turned to water.
And
may,
dear God,
may
your
crack be
occur.
Pure and sizzling.
We place in your
may your elbows
the
never be ashy.
May your weed be mad fire.
may your grape drink always be fire.
Right. Us.
May your beets be dope and fat.
May our hearts be awakened to the truth.
May your
of
Coke 45 always be ice cold and bubbly.
And racism and prejudice be no more.
Good luck with
holy
that.
Holy shit. This
dear
is pretty angering.
Has come upon
in all seriousness.
Yeah, it kind of makes me want to start shrieking.
Yeah, getting a little worked up here.
But to you,
we offer this sacrificial watermelon.
May the Lord heal your crip walk.
We pray to Black Jesus.
It is for
may
you
your pyramids
for
fly straight and true.
They're literally praying to black people.
And their grandparents before them. And their grandparents
they're not just like praying
them.
For them. They're praying to them.
Yep.
Okay, here we go.
Wait, hold on. What is this? What's this here?
Some boon has started shrieking.
As they do.
Get a job application and a whip.
Yeah. Make the bitch get a book, make the bitch read. Yeah.
He put cotton in my pants. Oh shit. Oh Lord.
could someone please go comfort the Sheba and she's scaring the white children.
Wow.
It was so perfect. I mean, when you played this to me for the first time, I thought like you had edited that in.
No. No.
Because that's really what I wanted to do.
Well, I mean, you know, they're low IQ emotional people. I mean, how much of this winding them up can you do? I mean, this person, I mean, what are the odds they're going to go out and, like, on the way home, they're going to see a random white person and run them over? We're not allowed.
Be allowed now.
This is why you don't let women lead church.
This is why you don't let Jews lead church.
Is this lady a Jew? Is that what you said earlier?
Yeah.
No. What?
May the tears that were never heard be heard now.
May Yahweh hear all your screams.
And thus may the healing begin.
Now let's go.
Rain?
The tears that we cry, may they be cried.
This is some
May
evil
the
shit.
Flames of Moloch
and thus in the sacred
burn all your sins away.
This is some blasphemous shit, boy.
Oh, man, and so fucking it voice, is. Man.
Amen.
All right.
Very deeply.
Now, if everyone will turn towards the back of the building and file outside, we have heated the arms of the Molech to red hot. So please, everyone with a small child, file out the door and we will throw our children on the Molech. Except the black ones, for whom we just prayed. All these people in this auditorium have just allowed a Jew to at least temporarily in a church, in an allegedly Christian church, temporarily she changed their religion.
Yes.
Their deity is the black race, and they're praying to it and supplicating and begging forgiveness of it as though they were begging forgiveness of God for their sins.
Yeah, it's some kind of humiliation ritual, you know, like cult conditioning, you know.
Well, there's some
like
powerful kayak. It's some powerful kayak voodoo for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody stood up and said anything. That says a lot.
Well, one person did.
In conclusion, Fry says here we have an authentic picture in microcosm of the future the Jews have mapped out for white America, the city on a hill. Will become a hovel in a ditch, rolling in white guilt forever. Mm. Wasn't that neat? This is just more of the plan going along exactly the way we want. I mean, the people they've got running for office now, and even the ones who wouldn't have been so nutty in the past, the few like Biden or whatever. All we got to do is sit back and let them do their thing, man.
Yeah.
Just let them do their thing. And they are going to make normal white Americans radical as fuck.
Wow.
Yeah, what's your hot take on that, Wyatt Tuber?
Well, you're telling me you got a Jew leading a Christian prayer?
Well, no, blacks? It wasn't Christian. It was Blackstian.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I'm just speechless. Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
Like, what denomination was this? I mean, I'm confused.
I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of explanation to it. I'm sure somebody in the comment section will know what church it was and all that. I would assume, based on the type of people that were there and everything, and just looking at the church that is, you know, one of the ones that's been really progressive for a long time.
Yeah, the gay ones and all that.
Like Presbyterian or Episcopal or something like that.
Because they used to be, you know, the gatekeepers, you know, my whole entire life. Yeah. And now you're seeing the gatekeepers being run by the enemy.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, whoa, you know? Whew.
Well.
Whew.
I mean, first of all, why would you ever let a Jew get up behind the podium at your church?
Right, right.
But second of all, why a woman? I mean, it says clearly and several times in the New Testament not to allow a woman to speak in church, much less get up there and give the sermon and tell all the parishioners to start praying to blacks. Oh, look. Here, let me do one. We'll do one.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Bow your heads.
I don't have anything prepared, but. Oh, Lord mercy, dear Lord Jesus, we is here to place ourselves in supplication towards the noble black race, and may the KFC rain from the sky, dear Lord, dear Lord.
Hallelujah.
May the trees grow, and the fruit of the tree be the beautiful bottles of the Thunderbird.
May the cotton
in the fields dry up and wither and blow away, and in their place grow beautiful crack plants. Dear Lord Jesus, hear my prayer.
I put that on God.
Lord mercy, Lord mercy. Amen. Let's eat.
May the police always have rubber guns.
Yeah.
May the tasers shoot marijuana smoke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cast blindness on them cracker motherfucking police.
Now here's a neat little story. Lee Rogers wrote this one. Lee's a great guy. His takes are so hot, they're like volcanic.
So ashes.
Here we go. The title of this one is, and this is on dailystormer.name as well, Post-Wall Fat Bitch Meghan McCain Whines About Her Miscarriage. And he's got this picture of Meghan McCain. Dude, she's like Jabba the Hutt now. I mean,
it's pretty disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, when she first became a thing, there were a lot of people who were like, yeah, I'd hit that. And I'd look at her and I'd think, yeah, you know, maybe. Because, like, she was kind of big, but she was the kind of big where it was like she had these giant tits and, you know, great old big curvy ass. And all. You're like, well, you know, I mean, yeah, I've drank like a liter of whiskey before. I mean, I could see it happening. but now she's like just this massive hippo, and he's got a picture of her, and the caption says, "The old wall hitting bitch Meghan McCain keeps getting fatter every single day, yet she wants us to feel bad for her because she had a miscarriage. Meghan McCain, the daughter of the dead Zionist traitor and all-around piece of shit John McCain, has been in the news whining about her miscarriage." From CBS News, Meghan McCain is opening up about suffering a miscarriage, which she said happened just a few weeks ago. The television host shared details of the experience in a New York Times op-ed Friday. McCain said the pregnancy came as a joyous surprise. The baby girl she was expecting would have been her and her husband Ben Domenech's first child. However,
I thought she was a dyke.
Well, I mean, who are we to argue with Meghan McCain and CBS News? And Ben Domenech, whoever he is, or Dominic, however you say it. However, she said she suffered a miscarriage the same day she shot a cover story for New York Times Magazine about her show, The View. "I look back at those pictures now, and I see a woman hiding her shock and sorrow," she wrote. "I'm posed for the camera, looking stern and strong, representing my fellow conservative women across the country. But inside, I am dying. Inside, my baby is dying." So she knew she was having a miscarriage, and instead of trying to get to the doctor as quickly as possible, she just sat there and let him snap the pics. I mean, what's going on? She kept posing? Well, anyway, the daughter of late Senator John McCain said she wishes she could have kept the miscarriage private, but that she wants to destigmatize the distressingly common experience. I didn't know that there was a stigma to that.
No. No, this is just like all her vanity and self-obsession shit. It's like turning it into like even more victimhood.
Yeah. "We deserve the opportunity to speak openly of them, to share what they were and to mourn," she wrote. McCain said she initially struggled with blaming herself for the loss. "I blamed myself," she said, Perhaps it was wrong of me to choose to be a professional woman, working in a high-pressure, high-visibility, high-stress field, still bearing the burden of the recent loss of my father, and facing on top of that the arrows that come with public life. I blamed my age. I blamed my personality, she continued. I blamed everything and anything a person could think of. And what followed was a deep opening of shame. Well, where was it? Between your legs? This, I told myself, is the reason my body is a rock-strewn wasteland in which no child may live. She said,
and nowadays no man would want a seed.
Right.
Her husband looks like Jimmy Kimmel.
Ah, well, no wonder. She said she eventually, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel would even bang, what's her face, the Jewish comedian.
Sarah Silverman.
Yeah. She said she eventually realized the miscarriage was not her fault and took comfort in thinking about her late father who died last August. She's like, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, I had a miscarriage, but at least my dad's dead.
Right.
That comforts me.
And so Lee writes.
Who is she blaming? The fetus or her husband?
I don't know. Maybe her father. Lee says, and I agree. Oh, but one thing is, you know, that I'm going to insert here before, you know, she said she blamed anything and everything she could think of. Well, I didn't hear her say, you know, I blamed myself for being a gross fat bitch because that plays into it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it says here, according to the Mayo Clinic, that being obese during pregnancy increases the risk of various pregnancy complications, including the risk of miscarriage, stillbirth, and recurrent miscarriage. Yeah. So, yeah, it had something to do with it for sure, man.
Well, so Lee says she was actually correct to initially blame herself for the miscarriage, but as is typical for millennial women, McCain ultimately chose not to take responsibility for what happened. The fact of the matter is that the risk of miscarriage increases the older a woman gets. So by choosing to wait until her mid-30s to try and have a child, she greatly increased the chance of a failed pregnancy. This is nobody's fault except her own. In addition, she, like a large percentage of millennial women, decided to spend the most fertile years pursuing a career in what she admits have been high visibility and high stress environments. Putting yourself in this position when you are pregnant is not generally good for the well-being of the baby. And on top of that, she's extremely fat and out of shape. It's safe to assume that her poor physical condition was a contributing factor in her miscarriage. But despite all these facts, she wants sympathy from people, even though she created the conditions that increased the possibility that she would have a miscarriage. Hopefully, this horribly fat and obnoxious skank is unable to have any children, and she dies alone, surrounded by wine bottles and cats. She deserves such a fate, considering what a terrible person she is. After all, this bitch is no different from her evil dad and is regularly promoting the interests of Jews and Israel over the interests of America. Yes, very good article, Lee Rogers.
Very good.
Yes. Yes.
Here.
Give that a clap.
Man, she in that picture in the article, I mean, she's not thin or anything. She's kind of big, but then the one at the top, she looks like she's been, like, created out of McCain's goiter. It's just...
It's bad. It's really bad, man. Oh.
What is wrong? Yeah, lesson for you there. You know, don't waste your youth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something.
Learn from these old bitches.
Yeah.
Don't hit that wall without no kids.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, you're fucked.
We're bumping up on the 1 hour mark. White Tuber, you've got a White Talk apology. Do you want to play that on this show? Is that why you posted it?
Oh no, I just wanted to share it with you.
Oh, okay.
But it's up to you.
Well, is it any good? Oh no, it's 5 minutes long. No, no, no.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes.
We'll let you post that in whatever the appropriate venue is. WhiteTuber, you know, speaking of all this YouTube nonsense, WhiteTuber didn't have the White Talk Saturday night as promised. Because why, WhiteTuber?
Well, they gave us another strike, sir. That's two.
Like, this channel that nobody hardly even watches is getting all these strikes. I mean, it's a great channel, and I think a million people should watch it. But the fact of the matter is, nobody's watching it. You know, it's new.
I think it's that Killer Bones nigga.
You think so? Oh, Killer Bones. He's angry at Drake. Yeah, let me pull up a little Killer Bones.
Tony Castle. It's Tony Castle he's got that feud with.
Yeah, that's Tony Castle. But no, I'll tell you what it is. What it is White Tuber goes around trolling all these niggas. And he gets them mad. And you can see him in his comments a lot. But like, he'll go find their videos and just fuck with them. And like, he makes the mistake of leaving his comment there. You know, if you're a content creator, you can't be doing that with your content creation account, you know. But like, you know, they see that and they're like, who this cracker is? And you know, the blacks, the Jews taught them years ago that anything they don't like on social media, all they got to do is report it and say, they be racist. And very likely they're going to get all your shit taken down. And so they see your comment there and they click on your avatar and it takes them to your channel and they open that up and, you know, it's like, look here, the third video from last is called Niggas Be Stupid, you know, or whatever. and they start reporting, you know, they click on the thing to, you know, report hate speech. And you're like, how you going to done let this KKK cracker ass motherfucking nigga up here talking about black
people. Per capita and shit.
Yeah, talking about black people, IQ, crime rates and all this horse shit. You know, and the next thing you know, you got a strike. And like, this is
that's probably true.
This is the second strike. And so like in 2 weeks without live streaming and yep. I don't know if you can even upload videos.
No, can't do the shit.
Yeah. And like one more and you're out.
Yeah, for sure. So,
and you know, it's coming.
You know it's coming no matter what. Yeah.
You know, once you got that second one, this shit's coming.
The last one was for spam. What does that even mean? Like, I don't get it. Like,
well, that's false reporting. And if they gave me one for spam, you should dispute that. Because spam is like, I'm not even sure what YouTube's definition of spam is. I guess
that's what I'm saying. I said false information. I was giving false information.
Oh, maybe you were talking about Holocaust facts or something.
Maybe. That could have been it.
False information. You're like, I think there might have been slightly less than 6 million. Man, oh man, oh man.
What are you gonna start another channel? You keep on trucking.
Well, you got to get on that D Live. You gonna get on that D Live?
You have to give it a try, man.
Yeah. All right. So let's do the plugs and we'll go to break. if you're a young white man of good character who's 18 years of age or older, and you're interested in pro-white activism, then you should consider applying for membership with Stormer Book Club. For more information on doing so, email stormerbookclubs@airmail.cc. That's plural, stormerbookclubs@airmail.cc. If you enjoy the Crypto Report, you enjoy our content, and you would like to contribute to our efforts, there are three ways to do so. There is a merch store listed in the description. You can go buy some merch. That's a great way to contribute. And there are also two cryptocurrencies where you can contribute, one Bitcoin, one Monero. And they're both down there in that description as well. We really need you to subscribe to the DLive, people. Got to subscribe to that DLive so that you get to keep watching the streams. And signing up to DLive is really easy. All you got to do is you go and you enter an email address. You can even use privacy-enhanced emails like all the ones at cock.li, Yandex, Tutanota, Proton Mail, all that, they accept it. You just put in the email address, you put in a password, and you're in. They don't require blood samples and urine samples and hair samples and DNA tests and all the, you know, and three phone numbers and all that stuff like Google does. So go over there and do that and subscribe to us. The link is in the description. It's at dlive.tv/Asmodor. And we are definitely going to be upping our live stream game over there. I'm certain of it. If you want to get in touch with the Crypto Report, that's tkr@airmail.cc. That's our official email. Make sure, because the last two or three, I haven't figured it up by the days yet, but we do streams, our live streams, on Wednesday and Friday. So there's either two or three of them left, because there's 10 days left. And I believe there's two left. This Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific, we will be doing what I guess will be the last TKR Live White Wednesday on YouTube. After that, TKR Live White Wednesday is going to be over on DLive. And then Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific, we will be doing our last faux show, Friday night special on YouTube. And after that, that's going to be going over to DLive. So you know we're going to be pitching a bitch. So make sure, go sub the channel and make sure you come and listen. Join us in the chat. Interact with us in the chat. We love it. We love having our friends and listeners and fans and all that over there. It's a great time is had by all. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Crypto Report. We'll be right back after this break.
Hello and welcome to Literacy Weekly, brought to you by your local Stormer Book Club. This week's passage is from an article on the Daily Stormer titled Fat Bitch Conversion Therapy by the man himself, Andrew Anglin, on July 17th, 2017. There has been a lot of talk on the internet these days about fat bitch conversion therapy. In theory, a man can find a fat bitch who is of extremely low sexual marketplace value and then psychologically manipulate her into getting into shape using verbal abuse, threats, and beatings. Personally, I believe this is a great idea and a system that can work. It isn't really that difficult to get into shape. You can get the fat bitch, then start regulating her food intake and bringing her to the gym with you. Within 6 months, you will have turned a fat slob 3-4 level into a firm and healthful 7 or 8. Of course, you will have to have sex with and look at the fat bitch during the period of transition, so it is a sacrifice. But I believe that a fat bitch that you have made healthy is more valuable than a bitch who has gotten fit of her own accord. What you have to make sure of is that you don't let her self-esteem go up as her looks improve. You also have to make absolutely certain that she believes she will die if she leaves you. This could in fact be the final solution to a lot of girlfriend problems that men are having. The process has 6 steps. Number 1, get in shape yourself. Raising your sexual marketplace value beyond that of the average man, it should take only 3-4 months. Number 2, find a girl who is of local age of consent up to 22 and has good genetics, but is just fat and lazy and thus has lower sexual marketplace value than you. Number 3, get her in shape. This should take a maximum of 6 months. Number 4, ensure her self-esteem remains at the level it was when she was fat and constantly remind her she would be nothing without you. Check local laws to see if you are allowed to threaten to murder her if she leaves you or cheats on you. If local laws prohibit that, find other ways to keep her in a state of fear. Number 5, get her preggo as soon as possible, but not while still fat. Give it at least a few months after she is fit. Number 6, spend as much time as possible with the children when they are young and implant in their minds the idea that their mother may turn against you and them. You need to make it clear that if she leaves, the children will absolutely remain loyal to you, even if the kite court rules that they have to live with her. Remember, you are going to have to prove the old adage, you can't turn a hoe into a housewife, wrong. As if we are going to fix our society, we are going to have to turn hoes into housewives. And I am genuinely starting to believe that it may be that we will turn fat and sloppy hoes into fit and healthful housewives. Even the most extreme examples of these can be done in 6 months if you know what you're doing and the girl is 22 or under and doesn't have some kind of serious genetic problem. It is mainly diet and then 4 days a week at the gym doing routine things. The risks? The obvious number one risk is what we've already implied. that after you transform the bitch using your intelligence and will, she will leave you to hypergamously slut it up on a much higher level than she could before you did the transformation. However, that risk can be dealt with by taking measures to ensure her self-esteem remains where it was when she was fat, and also making her fully psychologically dependent on you. The other risk is that you'll be dragged down to her level and become a fat slob yourself once you realize how easy it is. However, I think you are stronger than that. The other risk is that you'll be driven insane by having to have sex with and look at a fat bitch during the conversion process. But again, I think you are stronger than that. So overall, the risks here are minimal, and the rewards, big time. Saving the white race from extinction, as well as living a happy, normal family life. Okay, that was from Fat Bitch Conversion Therapy. Thank you, Andrew Anglin.
We'll be right back. back to the Crypto Report.
All righty. We back. We back. Is everybody back?
Neutralize.
Feels good to be back.
Euthanize.
Yeah, that's a catchy tune, isn't it? That is Humanizer by Power Cyan. And before that, we had an excellent Literacy Weekly about How to Get Your Woman in Shape by Andrew Anglin.
Great stuff.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good. I'm liking the way this new way of doing the show is going. Hopefully, it all comes out well in the end, and we can just do it like this from now on. It makes for a much higher energy, much more focused show, I think.
Yeah, it streamlines the whole thing.
Yeah. Hate Farmer, you had a story pulled up from Quillette about the hate crimes in Seattle. Why don't you get ready for that? But before we go to that story, there's a little bit of news here that I thought we might want to discuss. Here, let's hear this.
News, and we've got a lot of it here because he's accused of watching pornography on his phone in the moments leading up to a crash that killed a worker just inside of a Mark construction zone.
That semi driver has now been charged and made his first appearance in court today. Fox 9's Paul Bloom has the story.
Tate Doom made his first court appearance Monday, charged with criminal vehicular homicide. Doom was behind the wheel of a semi that allegedly barreled into a 994 construction zone in Rogers last fall, causing a chain reaction crash involving a Ford F-150 pickup hauling a trailer. The multiple impacts eventually dislodging the trailer that slid out of control, killing Vern Hedquist along the interstate. According to this GoFundMe page established at the time, Hedquist from Pillager was working in the construction zone gathering data for a DOT project. At the time of Hedquist's death, state patrol suggested the crash was preventable if drivers would only pay more attention to barrels and warning signs by slowing.
If you weren't driving around jacking off to port on your phone.
That's why they rely on the public to drive in a safe manner around the
driving while fapping.
We're basically driving through their office every day, and we need to drive in an attentive manner, put distractions away.
As for the charges against the 47-year-old Doom, the criminal complaint details the potential source of distraction on the road that October afternoon. Porn on one of two cell phones Doom had in the cab of his semi. Investigators report finding 14 video files that were deleted from the device after the crash. The files, all pornographic, were downloaded from a XXX website and then played. Analysis shows the last video began less than 2 minutes before Doom's semi rear-ended the pickup and trailer. Traffic reconstruction established Doom was moving at 72 miles an hour.
That's got to ruin your nut. 50.
Merging on eastbound 94 because of the engineering work being
DOT
done.
DOT investigators determined that the video was fucking hot.
A Hennepin County judge on Monday set Tate Doom's cash bail at $3,000 with conditions that bars him driving without a valid driver's license and insurance.
Oh, they why no condition that he can't watch porn?
You're supposed to keep your hands at 10 and 2, not 10 and dick.
I'm right. Jeez, man. And, you know, this is such a problem. Not just the porn. I mean, the whole thing with the phone. But, like, the porn thing is probably a bigger problem than people think. Like, back in about, 2004, I would guesstimate, I got in the truck with a friend and we were going somewhere and he was showing me this new system he had. And, you know, back then you didn't have all the fancy Bluetooth to just connect everything to your phone to the stereo. So, you know, everybody was still using CDs and all. And the hot new thing was the DVD players, you know, where a screen would come out and fold up. Right, because you didn't have the giant screen back then either, but like you had the standard old size of an audio player and it had a screen in it that when you turned it on it would come out, it would come straight out and it would fold up. And like it would give you the same type of information that's on the screen that's embedded in your dash now. And you could put DVDs in it and play DVDs, but they had a safety feature on them from the factory that the vehicle's in gear, that it won't play the DVD. But if you went like if you didn't go to some big chain place like Car Toys or something like that, if you went to, you know, the local guy, they would disable that feature for you if you wanted. And we get in this guy's car and he's like, check this out. And like, we're out driving and we're heading up to the freeway and he puts in a DVD and it's like two blondes eating each other out. And I was like, dude, you drive around watching this shit? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, how can you drive and do that? And, you know, it turned out he was just one of these people who, if he hasn't killed somebody yet, it's just a wonder. Because when texting first got to be a thing, I was in the truck with him again. This was a few years later. And this was, you know, in the flip phone era where, like, you weren't even texting to where you had, like, a little mini keyboard on there, where like a typewriter keyboard that you were typing on. This was when, like, if you wanted to type the letter C, you had to hit the, the number three.
Number one, like three times or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah, whatever. Number two, yeah, or whatever it was. Three times, yeah. Number one, number two. And he's sitting there texting people while he's driving 60 miles an hour up the highway. And, like, he's going all the way over, not only onto the other side of the highway, but, like, onto the shoulder on the other side of the highway. And I'm grabbing the wheel and yanking it over and screaming and cursing at him. And I'm like, dude, if it's just an absolute fucking necessity for you to get whatever this message out is, I mean, if you need dope or whatever it is, give me the phone and tell me what you want texted, you know? And like, no, I can do it. Well, obviously you can't. But can you imagine, like, this guy's a truck driver. He was probably hopped up on amphetamines and just, like, horny in a way that's completely outside of nature. And he's got two phones, and he's sitting there because, like, God damn, man, I'm trying to surf between videos here, trying to find the optimum video to where I can, you know, I mean, I have to see whatever this exact thing is when I blow my load. And
so I can operate my manual transmission here, get the stick shift. Yeah.
And he's doing this, and all of a sudden, he kills somebody.
Jeez, man.
And now they're talking about $3,000 bail. If it's $3,000 bail, you know that whatever the charge is not too serious. I mean, they're calling it vehicular homicide, and I don't recall right now where they said this was that it happened. Like, if it was in Texas, this would be some serious shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, $3,000 for vehicular homicide doesn't make sense.
Yeah, dude. I've had higher bail than that on charges that were nothing, you know? Right. And, like, so it's a whole weird thing. This is how bad society's gotten. And this is why, like, I mean, maybe we should reconsider just having the ability to do all this stuff. I mean, as far as, like, should porn just be downloadable anywhere, anytime? Is that really what the First Amendment was written for?
Clearly. You know, I saw an article somewhere that said that porn produces as much carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases as the car in 1 year or something.
Yeah,
like
I saw that one too, but I don't know how much credence I give that, because what they're saying is that it's because people are watching the videos and, you know, that consumes electricity and all this other stuff. But if they weren't watching the porn videos, they'd be watching something else on the screen of their computer.
Right, true.
Yeah. Are they going to say, like, you know,
I'm not defending NFL porn here.
Yeah, well, you could say that about anything, like Netflix or the NFL or
yeah, absolutely.
Something.
Watching Holocaust documentaries is fucking up the ozone layer. So everybody should quit doing that.
Yeah, all those Holocaust documentaries are producing gas.
Yeah.
Every time you watch it, it releases a metric ton of Zyklon B into the atmosphere.
Right.
You don't want that, you know?
No, you can't have that.
So, can I spurg out here for a second? I was one of these kids that used to.
I don't know. Can you?
May I?
please spurg out.
I was one of these kids that loved documentaries. you know.
Same.
And, like, you know, British documentaries are the best, but, like, I'd watch PBS and I'd watch Nova, you know. And it was approachable for me. It wasn't, like, completely over my head as a kid. But I was learning something. And I watched probably the first Nova documentary I've seen in years about black holes on Netflix. Yeah. And they've got this ugly-ass Yenta. And literally everyone they interview is like some Pajit or some Jewish woman. And there was like probably one identifiable Gentile old white man. And he was like a associate with Stephen Hawking. And it was so dumbed down. It was like, burn, fucking science, black holes. Burn. And they had Neil deGrasse Tyson on there doing his usual, like, everything with him is a food metaphor. Black holes be like a, be like some nigga at an all-you-can-eat buffet. He just chows down, he ate all the fried chicken at the buffet, and there's nothing left. Ain't no piece of watermelon can leave that buffet, can leave that nigga's black hole.
Oh, yeah. Documentaries are fucking horrible now. And you rarely ever see one where they're actually trying to, like, okay, this was the history of this thing or whatever. It's all narrative, agenda-driven shit. But, like, I've always liked documentaries, too. And not necessarily even, like, the old Nova ones or whatever, but I used to really like, in the 80s, when, you know, cable TV and all was first really a thing, the Arts and Entertainment Channel, you know, A&E, it didn't used to be a place where they played, like, three-year-old mini or TV series and stuff. It used to be a place where, you know, they'd have crap like the symphony orchestra and opera and all this other stuff, but there was just documentaries all the time. And they were all, I called it the World War II channel, because that's what I watched it for. It was all these World War II.
History Channel
and
too.
I remember, I there was a particular one that I would watch that I had on video, and I would rewind it to the spot and have my friends watch it. I go, look at this guy. This is Admiral Dönitz. Like, he was so fucking badass. Listen to him tell this story. And they're talking about some battle he was in. And he's like, and I had a bullet in my leg and a bullet in my head. And I said, okay, this is not good. We've got to turn. Like, I had a bullet in my leg and a bullet in my head. It was one of the greatest things. But I'd sit there and I'd watch these documentaries and stuff, and I really enjoyed them. But, you know, there's nothing like that to watch anymore. Like, you go on Netflix or you go on Amazon Prime and put in documentary anymore, and they just suck. Like, the only documentaries they still make that are any good, and it's because they don't have to do with, you know, history of government, politics, war, or anything like that. That stuff's all so agenda-driven now. Nobody's looking for the truth in any of that. Even if it's not about World War II and the Holocaust, it's all agenda-driven by critical theory, you know, to tear down everything about white history and Western civilization and all that. But, like, it's, entertainment documentaries can be really good. I just watched I think it was called Long Strange Trip, I think is what it's called. And it's like a five or six part documentary on the Grateful Dead. And, you know, as our listeners know, that's one of my things, is I really like the Grateful Dead. But, you know, and of course, the thing was made by Jews. You know, it's like directed by Jewy Jewenstein, and then, you know, produced by Keike Keichelberg and all that. But it was really well done, and I learned a lot of things, and it was very entertaining. You know, it's one of the only times in I don't know how long that I cranked up the great old big TV in the living room and turned on the big old sound bar and all that and just sat back. And I mean, like, I think I watched, and they're an hour and a half long each, and I watched all five or six of them in one sitting. It was great. But, And you know, they've got a lot of the music documentaries. You know, you can go and learn about Stevie Ray Vaughan or Black Sabbath or, you know, whoever it is you're into, they got the documentaries about it. And those are great. But the thing is, there's no agenda to drive there. They're celebrating the lives and work of musicians or whatever. But my God, it's like every other documentary that comes out now if it's, you know, not the kind of thing you're talking about, if it's a historical documentary and all, I mean, it's just like every couple of months, three or four new Holocaust ones come out or more where they're, recently discovered that Hitler used to get so angry he would throw himself to the floor in front of everybody and start gnawing at the carpet, you know, and shit like that.
Yeah, it's like a Nazism and the occult.
Yeah.
Dr. Mengele, fucking, yeah. You know, just... I used to call the History Channel the Holocaust Channel because if it wasn't like, you know, planes and bombs and guns, that's all it was. It was just the Holocaust.
Yeah.
It's like the same phenomenon with Trump and the news, you know, like what would these documentaries be about, or what would the channel do without the fucking Holocaust?
Yeah, and the thing is, if they wanted to do really good documentaries of that type to like inform people and educate people about these historical events that they don't know about, where's the big documentary on the USS Liberty? I mean, yeah, BBC made one time, but I mean, where is it on the History Channel? Why aren't we seeing it there? You know, and I always thought it would be neat. I can't remember the name of it, but they used to have, and I really enjoyed this one. It was a weekly series where they would redo these old battles, and they would have like the old dudes who were in them would be describing what went on. They, you know, sea battles and air battles and stuff, and they would do CGI animation to recreate the battle, and they'd be showing you the, you know, this was this ship and it was equipped with this and this and this, and you know, here were its weak spots, here's where its fuel was, and you know, and these were the P-51 Mustangs that were trying to hold off the Zeros, you know, and that kind of thing. And it was just really well done stuff, very gripping. I wish I could remember the name of it because I would really like to go try and find some of those old episodes. But I mean, think how great a USS Liberty of one of those would be, where they actually recreate the thing in CGI and do it as accurately as possible. I mean, they would sit down with the people. They would go through the logs from the ships and stuff, and they would sit down with the survivors and talk with them, and they would map the thing out in time and everything to where it was just like what happened and recreate it all in CGI. Imagine the effect that doing one of those for the USS Liberty attack would be, where people just sit there and watch, and then, you know, sit there and watch it go on for that long, and then try to say, oh, well, it was an accident. No.
Yeah, I mean, with the Liberty, you could even just be even-handed. You could just present both sides. Like, these people think it was a deliberate attack, you know, trying to spark a war between, you know, the United States and Egypt or something like that, and then these people say it was an accident. You know, you could be even-handed and get away with it. But
well, if you were even-handed, if you were even-handed and reported the facts and let both sides say their piece, any reasonable person would come away from it saying these Jews are lying,
which is why they'll never make it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
The only thing I learned in this atrocity of a fucking documentary was that I didn't know before was that Einstein was a transcendent genius.
Oh,
invented everything.
Yeah. What, you mean you didn't learn that some people say the universe don't be like it is, but it do?
The Jew that came up with the idea that everything is relative.
He didn't even come up with it.
No, he didn't.
He was the Martin Luther King of Jew physicists. He stole all his shit.
That's exactly the same expression or the term that I used when I was complaining about it to my girlfriend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, great minds.
they escape me right now, but there was a French, a Belgian, and a German who basically did all the grunt work and all the mathematical foundation, and they kind of like came up with a theory independently of each other. And then, you know, Einstein's like, oh, I can steal this and capitalize on it.
Yeah.
And he fucking Jews off to United States. And
I should have a girlfriend here to say all these witty things to. All right, ladies. TKR at airmail.cc. No. My life is... as blissfully free of that type of drama as possible.
You are a nationalist ascetic.
I'm a nationalist ascetic, yeah, I guess. I'm not an ascetic. I just don't have a steady girlfriend. But I mean, you know.
You're not wearing a hair shirt?
No. No, I'm not. As a matter of fact, I'm wearing a t-shirt. And I happen to have my New Balances on as well. The official shoe of Neon Nazis.
Shoes.
Yeah. So, we have, is the Spurg out over, or do you feel the need to Spurg a little more? I guess that means he's done Spurging.
He got out of the system.
Sorry. No, I just remember the time when documentaries had like a dignified Englishman's voice, and it was like a 20-minute like painted map with like moving arrows moving slowly.
Yeah.
And then Alexander's troops, auxiliaries, went around the northwest hill.
All the cheesy reenactors. Yeah.
This week on Mutual of Omaha, what's his name? Goes to the deepest jungles of Africa to show us the savage and strange pygmy midget people.
The pygmy negritos.
And their backwards practices. They used to kind of be like that. You know, National Geographic, I guess it's been a while now, 6 months or a year or whatever. You know, they've got some, I think she's Jewish, but they've got this liberal front hole editor-in-chief or whatever it is now. And like, they're apologizing for the entire history of National Geographic because, like, it was wrong to portray these Africans and these, you know, like these South American Hivaro headhunters and stuff as savage and backwards. Like, well, what should they have portrayed them as? Oh, they're so much better than us. I mean, you know, we should all be like them, not the other way around. Well, anyway. So you got the story there, Hate Farmer. Red pill us on how bad the hate crime in Seattle is, please.
Well, apparently it's a lot worse than I thought it was. The hate crime epidemic that never was, a Seattle case study. The Seattle Times recently reported that an epidemic of hate crimes is taking place in the Emerald City. According to the newspaper, more than 500 biased incidents were reported to Seattle police in 2018 alone. And this figure represents an increase of nearly 400% since 2012. However, this widely circulated claim, is at least very misleading. An examination of the Seattle data indicates that fewer than 40 actual criminal cases resulted from real serious hate incidents were successfully prosecuted between 2012 and 2017. This provides an excellent case study of how media coverage of flashpoint issues such as hate crime can, whether intentionally or not, of course intentionally, sensationalizes and exaggerates the urgency of social problems.
No shit.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
And so long and short of it is that it's basically just like crazy people and junkies like screaming racial epithets at each other. And each one of those is a hate crime.
Yeah, they broke it down. I read the story. And like the breakdown on it, the way it ends up, you know, it starts off with like there's 400 reports. And then it gets down to there's like, okay, so the police say there's maybe 37 of them that are worth looking into. And then after that, they're like, well, maybe 10 of these are actionable. And then after that, it's like, yeah, maybe 5 of them got convictions. And 3 of those were mentally ill people. And the other 2 were homeless. And so, and then I got the impression from the way they were describing some of the charges that like, they have a charge in Washington State for like if you're some bum standing on the corner and some black guy walks by or whatever, you go, hey, look, a nigger. What's up, nigger? Like they charge you with some shit and it's categorized as a hate crime because that's the thing that these people were getting convicted of. And like it's amazing. And you know, like our fellow white men at the ADL and the SPLC, you know that whatever the absolute worst shrieking number they can come up with that this thing started off with, that's what they're advertising is what's going on. But like, you know, it's not just a thing that's limited to Seattle, as everybody knows, because like the ADL screams that like the anti-Semitic hate incidents have gone up so much since Trump and all, and like they're counting as an anti-Semitic hate incident, every single call that went to a synagogue or a Jewish community center, when this guy was doing dozens, if not hundreds of them, I think it was over 100 of them, and then they finally caught him, and it was a Jewish kid in Israel doing them. But they're still counting them as anti-Semitic hate incidents. And,
Know. And graffiti. Like, if you see a swastika on the side of the bathroom stall.
That's or, or flyers. Flyers are hate incidents.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And they also point out that cities that have these hate crime units, as soon as they get the hate crime unit, the next year, the statistics on hate crimes is like triple what they were.
Well, you got to have something. You got to have something to justify them.
Uh-huh.
You know, because that's how bureaucratic shit works. You create a department, and the department will create whatever the situation it is that they have to deal with to justify themselves and keep the funding coming and keep the jobs. It's the same thing with jails, you know. You know, there was this big boom in building jails in Texas a few years ago. And people were saying, well, you know, we're going to build this giant jail. And it's a lot more than we're going to need, but, you know, just in case. And everybody with a lick of sense was like, I don't know about this. Because, like, you know, you might need enough beds for a couple of thousand inmates or whatever. But if you build a 10,000-bed facility, you're going to fill that son of a bitch up one way or the other. I mean, it's going to be full. I'm not sure that's a good thing, you know. That's just how that shit works, man. It's just like if you give them funding, they're going to find a way to spend it. And if you
lose it.
Yeah, yeah. And if you give them and they'll spend it fast. They'll spend it and say they need more. It's just the way bureaucracy works, at least, you know, in our society. It may or may not. I mean, I'm not one of these Randian people who says that, well, bureaucracy by its very nature does X. Because I think there have been some cultures that one of the things they really, really, really did well was bureaucracy, like the Germans. And I'm not even talking about necessarily like the NSDAP era Germans. Like, you know, Hitler's father was a bureaucrat. You know, he worked in government service. Yeah, and that's what he wanted Hitler to grow up and be, because it was such a respected profession. And, like, Germany had the greatest bureaucrats and bureaucracies on earth.
We were living in Germany, and I remember my dad hanging up the phone really pissed off. And he told me there had been some charges on the phone bill. And he said, well, we didn't make these calls. You know, we weren't even in town there. And he said the woman's response was, the German telecom does not make mistakes, sir.
Yeah, somebody made these calls. Mm. Well, I mean, I'm sure they're not good now like they used to be, because they have, you know, they have a whole different culture and society now. They're mm-hmm. a paused liberal democracy thing now. Multicultural quality. And everything. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they are probably still very efficient in some areas. I mean, like, if you do a hate crime on German Twitter or something like that, you get knocked at the door.
Oh, boy, they're all over you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they just, what do they call that, anarcho-tyranny?
Yeah. Well, yeah. But, well, anarcho-tyranny is like when, you know, things purposely don't work to fuck with you. I think, I don't know, let me look it up. I've got the idea in my mind of what it is, but let's get the dictionary definition here.
All right. Well, you look that up. I'll just read the concluding paragraph in this article here. By the way, this is from Quillette, the hate crime epidemic that never was. When the media suggests that America has become some sort of dystopia in which minorities are constantly under threat of mob attack, when even a prominent black actor supposedly being beaten in the wee hours by a MAGA-hatted racist in a Chicago yuppie district, it is a good idea to check the actual data. The same rule should apply to all sensational claims, whether it's a community activist trying to convince us of hate crime epidemic, immigration hawks trumpeting a supposed surge in violent crime by undocumented migrants, fuck you with your even-handedness, or culture warriors claiming that we are under siege from Islamic terrorists. Fear sells newspapers and generates clicks. But to flip to Ronald Reagan's famous axiom on its head, when it comes to media reports of crime surges, first verify, then trust.
Yeah. Okay, here's the Wikipedia article on it for what that's worth. Anarcho-tyranny, as suggested when introduced by Samuel T. Francis in 1992, is a Hegelian synthesis of the two opposites, anarchy and tyranny. Lou Rockwell summarized the description of the term in 2003 as, quote, the simultaneous existence of armed dictatorship and the absence of the rule of law. And that's what we've got in our Western pretty countries. Funny. You know, it's like when you'll have some kind of a thing where, you know, you've got the left on one side and the right on the other side, and the left launches all these violent attacks, and nobody does anything to them. Like, the police just stand by and act like they don't see it. And then when the people on the right defend themselves, then suddenly the entire weight of the state comes down on them.
Right.
Anarcho-tyranny.
Or in England, when you have some sort of grooming or rape gang.
Right.
You get away with it. And then you mention a picture of the rapist.
Well, yeah. Not only that, or like your daughter is being groomed. You know, your prepubescent daughter is being drugged and groomed by a Muslim rape gang. And so you go to the police to report it, and the police arrest you and charge you with, you know, skin hate.
And child abuse.
Yeah.
In Soviet Union, how do those jokes go? Weird Al Yankovic. No, that's not Weird Al.
Soviet Russia, car drive you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's also tiresome, isn't it?
They just don't quit.
Let me see what else we got. We've been going for...
I don't think we mentioned the black vest protesters in the Pantheon in Paris.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I briefly saw this. It's the black vest protesters. The vests weren't the only thing that was black, was it?
No, I don't see a single one of them wearing a vest. They're all just fucking...
They just don't have shirts on. It looks like black vests.
So there was a mudslide into the Pantheon, which I guess is some sort of, French building dedicated to their war heroes and stuff like this. Undocumented migrants calling themselves the Black Vest Protesters flooded the Pantheon in Paris and demanded the right to remain in France. The protesters vowed to remain on site until all of the illegals get proper papers.
What?
Some 200 to 300 niggers stormed the Pantheon, a popular tourist site, and a mausoleum where the most renowned French national heroes such as Voltaire, Victor Hugo, all dead old white cracker motherfuckers, are buried. Yep. We are paperless, voiceless, faceless, useless for the French Republic. We come to the grave of your great men to denounce your disrespect.
Useless.
Yeah. We will remain here until the last one of us has been given documents. Yeah, habitus. You want documents? Here's a deportation notice. You have 24 hours to get the fuck out.
Seriously.
Wow.
Yeah. Noah, and so, as some of the comments said, you know, like, where are the rubber bullets? Where's the gas?
Well, I mean, France has got to do something about this, or it's over. And the weird thing is, before all these dune monkeys and niggers took over the big cities like Paris and everything, like they have for so long now, I remember back in the day, like in the 80s or early 90s or whatever, you'd read these articles where, you know, non-French people would be outraged at the jingoism of the French, where, because like they were so big on conserving their culture that they would have government panels that had absolute authority over, like, okay, yeah, we're not going to use English words for this and that. Like, yeah, you can open a McDonald's, but you're not going to call that a hamburger. We have a French word for that, and it's this, you know. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. But it seems like if you're just not very pale, you can do whatever you want there, and they don't care, at least the authorities and all. Because, you know, it's been like well over 20 years. They're like every Christmas and New Year's and Bastille Day and all that in cities like Paris, where it's just full of these Muslims and Africans and all, They light thousands of people's cars on fire.
Yeah.
They just expect it. It just happens every time. And I don't know.
It was like 2016 was really bad. It was like a 250,000 cars or something set on fire. It was insane. I remember that they call it the Ballyloo, which I think is like the outskirts or something like that, a neighborhood. Yeah. So, a suburb. It's a suburb. So they call them suburbs, but they're just no-go zones.
Yeah. No-go zone means enemy colony in your base.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that means. And, you know, if we had any... And they're rat's nests. If we had any kind of sane, functional government, they would send the police and the military in there. They would just, you know, suspend all civil rights inside those things and send the police and military in there to clean them out like rat's nests.
Yeah.
And get those people out of here. Yeah.
It's bad enough that these people are stealing boats on the English Channel, and they're just sailing the whatever it is 11 or so miles across the English Channel into England, and England's not doing anything about it.
Yeah. Well, we got one more story. Let's end on a white pill. What do you say?
That sounds good. Let's, man, a lot of suppressing stuff going on.
Yeah. This is from Poland, and as everybody knows, the Jews are really, really they've got a pause machine that they're trying to pump the pause into Poland with, and they have put a supercharger and nitrous and everything on it. It's like a top fuel engine, and they're trying to pump every kind of pause possible into Poland. And the Poles, I got to give them some credit, man. Those Polacks are standing up to it. You know, the first thing they tried to do is they tried to get the Poles to apologize for being at fault for the Holocaust.
Yeah, remember and, that shit?
And pay for it and hand back all these billions of dollars of property and houses and stuff, just to, as long as some Jew claims, yeah, you know, that was my house once. And like, oh, well, you got to give the Jew this. And they were like, hey, fuck you. And so that was good. And they even passed a law saying, making it a jailable offense for anybody on Polish territory subject to Polish law to claim that Poland was in any way responsible for the Holocaust. Well, now we got another thing. This is a story by Spartacus. And I got to say, and I've said this before, like on the BBS and stuff, but I'm going to say it right here. I really, really love Spartacus's articles. Spartacus is so fucking underrated because, like, when you hear people talking about, you know, they'll list their favorite two or three authors at Daily Stormer, Spartacus doesn't come up near often enough. Spartacus is, he's not only great, but he's fucking consistent. It's always good. Poland. Normal people outnumber faggot paraders 4-1. You Goyim thought you could have a nice quiet town somewhere, didn't you? He writes, remember Goyim, not accepting every piece of degenerate gibberish Shlomo dreams up in the cesspits of his inbred mind is undemocratic. CNN. A Polish city celebrated its first ever LGBTQ equality march on Saturday, but it struck a starkly different tone to the joyous and hedonistic affairs associated with pride parades. Ringed by riot police, around 1,000 pride marchers walked defiantly through the streets of the northeastern city of Bialystok as thousands of nationalist football ultra fans, far-right groups, and others threw flash bombs, rocks, and glass bottles. And Spartacus points out, I wasn't aware hedonism is now explicitly a virtue.
Yeah.
But the article continues, as counter-protesters yelled, God, honor, and motherland, and Bialystok free of perverts, the pride marchers chanted, Poland free of fascists. In return, police said about 4,000 people were involved in demonstrations against the march. Bags of flour and other objects were thrown out of communist-era housing blocks at the pride marchers who were moving along a 3-kilometer route through the city center. According to Bialystok's police spokesman, Tomasz Kropa, the violence led to the detention of 20 people, four of whom were suspected of committing crimes, including the use of threats and insults against officers. And Spartacus writes, good thing the badge niggers were there to defend the freaks and arrest people for insulting them. Because nothing says democracy quite like the state oppressing the majority at the behest of a bunch of freaks that nobody likes. Mm-hmm. It's principles and values. Who we are. The city of 298,000 people is located in the conservative region of, I'm sure I'm saying this wrong, Podlasie, a stronghold for Poland's ruling right-wing Law and Justice Party, known by acronym PIS. According to anti-racism groups, Bialystok has become a byword for its strong far-right movements. Many of the acts of xenophobic aggression have been committed in Podlasie compared to other regions in Poland, Rafał Pankowski from the anti-extremist group Never Again told CNN. Rafał appears to be a very common first name among Jews in Poland, and he put some proof of that up. Of course, first names aren't proof of anything. Most people named David are non-Jews, but given him being a professional defender of filth as well, I think we can make an educated guess. Then the CNN article continues. The hostile atmosphere did not dampen the mood of a multi-generational group of marchers who described the event as a victory in their fight for more equality, despite the threats. I'm trying to see this in a joyful way, but this march is also sad for me because I did not think it would be as dangerous as it is. Anna Petrucha, 26, who came from Warsaw to speak at the march, told CNN. Saturday's march was one of 24 parades scheduled to take place this year in Poland, a record number that campaigners say is a reaction to the uptick of homophobic and transphobic language by Poland's Catholic leaders and PIS. We're in the middle of an ongoing wave of hateful propaganda, which is fueled both by the state and the Catholic Church. Holbert Sobecki, co-president.
The Catholic Church hates faggots? That's
in Poland, it sure does. Oh, it does. Spartacus has written articles on that, too. Anyway, Holbert Sobecki, co-president of Warsaw-based LGBT plus organization Love Does Not Exclude, told CNN from a cafe in Bialystok. Another NGO working against the majority of on behalf of a tiny minority, because that's also principles and values. These people in charge of the Polish government really should crack down on these fucking NGOs, as well as on who's funding them. Just ban them from taking any foreign funds, and you've basically killed them. And while they're at it, they should change their name to something with a better acronym. And this is from CNN again. According to officials, there were about 32 protests registered for Saturday, the majority in opposition to the Pride March. These included a family picnic at Bialystok's Branicki Palace, organized by Artur Kosicki, the Marshal of Podlasie, and an outdoor prayer vigil next door at the Roman Catholic Bialystok Cathedral. Bialystok's Catholic Archbishop, Tadeusz Wojcia, and I know I said that wrong, called on congregants to, quote, defend Christian values by attending the picnic, adding that the LGBTQ march was, quote, an initiative foreign to the region. The picnic had bouncy castles, folk musicians, and the local army regiment exhibiting its artillery. CNN approached Kosicki, who is from PIS, for an interview, but he declined. PIS and the government also ignored repeated requests for comments by CNN. The bouncy castles of hate. Also notice that literally all of society, the church, the army, the government, is still normal in Poland. And in spite of this, they couldn't just ban these faggots from organizing their filth to begin with, because principles and values. Then back to the CNN article. Many polls in the country's urban centers are supportive of the push for LGBTQ rights, with Warsaw hosting its largest pride parade earlier in June. But there's been resistance elsewhere to the community's increasing visibility in a country where same-sex marriage and adoptions are illegal, and anti-LGBTQ attacks are not considered a hate crime by law. There, and Spartacus says he hates big cities. They're the death of every virtue man has. Once we deal with the Jews and the monkey people, our main focus should be on creating an economic system without these dysgenic urban death zones. I agree. And the article continues on after that, but I think the Poles deserve applause.
Seriously, yeah. Salute to the Polacks.
And he's got a quote in here from Oswald Spengler. The quote says, "Barbarism is that which I call the strong race, the eternal warlike, in the type of the beast of prey man. It often seems to have ceased to exist, but it is crouching in the soul, ready to spring. Given a big challenge, and it is on top of the enemy. It is dead only when late urban pacifism, with its weary desire for peace at any price, short of that of its own life, has rolled its mud over the generations. That is the spirit of self-disarmament, following on the physical, which comes of unfruitfulness." Little Spengler, he was a card, I tell you.
I remember I had a social studies teacher that said that the most important principle of democracy was minority rights, not majority rule.
Sounds about right.
Well, that's why democracy is the worst form of government.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing I bring up a lot. And, you know, it's one of these things that, like, people who are, like, the super constitutionalists and all like to quote. But it's absolutely true. You know, I'm not one of these people who wants, like, you know, I'm not some NRX guy who overdosed on RPGs and things like that and sat around thinking I'm the smartest guy in the world and what we need is monarchy back and all that. I'm not for that. I want a republic that actually works like a republic, but it's a hard thing to build because you have to have an empowered and educated society that understands what a republic is, and it also has to be monoracial and monocultural. Because, you know, in Plato's Republic, he wrote that the first duty of a ruler is to guard the purity of the blood of the people. Because you can't have a republic with a bunch of different multicultural mudbloods running around. Am I right?
Yeah. But you also need an aristocracy that's loyal to the country.
Right.
That sees itself and its own progress and safety in terms of the nation.
Well, that's why you can't be letting Jews run things. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, you know, we've had plenty of white aristocracy that wasn't on our side either. But the thing is, the quote that I was going to give, and it's true, is democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what they're going to have or voting on what they're going to have for dinner. A republic is a well-armed sheep contesting the results. So, you know. But they love to tell us now that we live in a democracy. And even like, there's so much disinformation. If you go like on Wikipedia and you look up republic, Wikipedia will tell you that a republic is a democracy. a republic has democratic institutions for sure, but it's not a democracy because there's no mob rule. In a republic, you know, everybody in a certain neighborhood can't decide that they hate old Joe up the road, so they all get together and vote to take away his house and his land and his wife and all that. You know, he's got some rights to some things, and he has the rights to be able to defend that shit if they try it. But anyway, it's been a good show, guys. I enjoyed
it. Definitely informative stuff.
Yeah, I like the new way of doing this, too. I think we're going to keep doing this as long as it turns out okay, you know, once we're done. Meaning if it sounds good.
And I enjoyed hearing the reading, too. I was able to listen to that.
Oh, the Literacy Weekly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, see, the guys on my show, they don't ever listen to the show. So they don't get to hear the music and the Literacy Weekly and all, but now they get to listen to it, which is good. But it's a good way to start the show, too, because, you know, the intros and all are designed to, you know, get you amped up and ready to go for the show. And so who needs that more than the hosts?
Precisely.
But anyhow, let's do the plugs and get on out of here, fellas. If you're a young white male of good character who is an American and age 18 or older, and you're interested in pro-white, pro-American activism, then you should strongly consider applying for membership with Stormer Book Club. To find out more about Stormer Book Club, email stormerbookclubs@airmail.cc. That's plural. stormerbookclubs@airmail.cc. White Wednesday happens again this Wednesday at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, 6 Pacific on the Asmodor YouTube channel. That is linked in the description. The Friday Night Special, TKR Live Friday Night Special, happens on the same channel on Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific. If you are a fan of this content, you enjoy this content, and you want to support this content, we got three ways to do it. We've got the merch store linked in the description. You can go buy merch. We've got two cryptocurrencies. We've got Bitcoin and Monero, so you can use either one of those to support the show. And we certainly appreciate it when you do. If you need to get in touch with somebody with the Crypto Report, if you've got some custom music for us, or you want to say, hey, Hate Farmer, big fan, and hey, WhiteTuber, awesome work, whatever, or if you're maybe, oh, never mind, I'm not going to go into that shtick again. The official email for the Crypto Report is tkr@airmail.cc. What have I forgotten, guys? If I've forgotten anything,
DLive,
hell yeah. Get over to DLive.tv/Asmodor and subscribe to the DLive so that you're going to be ready to go when the streams start over there. Now, even though we're going to do these last couple of streams this week on YouTube, you know, God willing, the channel stays up, which it may not. But even though we plan on doing that, that doesn't mean that, because now we can do it. That doesn't mean that we're not going to go and do some kind of a test stream that might be fun or whatever. Or not even that test stream. We might just do a stream over there. We might start streaming over there before the YouTube thing's over. So you need to get over there and follow my channel so that you can be in on all that. This is going to be a big revolution. DLive is going to be a big thing. YouTube has handed them lock, stock, and barrel, the live streaming industry. So get over there, get in on the ground floor. Be one of the first ones in on it. Then years from now, you can say, yeah, I was ahead of my time. All right. It's been a great show. Thanks, Wreck and Crew. Thanks, listeners. We'll see you Wednesday.